Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing? What's going down?
I am the best person I can be at this point in the week. Chris, yesterday me and my partner went to go and look at little puppy dog. Aww. Little puppy dog. So we are about to welcome into our lives a brand new little life, a little puppy dog. And yeah, we're going to have a nice time with the new dog. So I had the best Sunday. Started off, I ate last night, Sunday morning, I ate last night's curry. And then I went to a car boot, bought myself an Amstrad emailer. Are you familiar with an Amstrad emailer?
Isn't that something from like the 1980s or 1990s?
It was something from the early 2000s to right. Late 90s. It was when email was kind of really kicking off in the country. And Alan Sugar's company, Amstrad, him of the UK Apprentice TV show, decided that they were going to create something called an Amstrad emailer. Kind of like a halfway house between a computer and a
tablet
and a mobile phone, I suppose. Or it was basically just like somewhere you could do emails with a little keyboard next to your phone in the hallway. It was like an analog way of sending emails, kind of. But it was. It was very unsuccessful, but I saw one boxed at a car boot and I was like, I need that Amstrad emailer. I need it. I want it. I'm going to have it.
I've actually read Alan Sugar's autobiography a few times. Yeah. It's so fascinating. He's born to a working class background, East End London, built an electronics empire pretty much out of nothing. But so much of the book is set in Japan because back then, 70s, 80s, Japan dominated a lot of the hardware.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating hearing his stories coming to Japan. He's he really doesn't like Japan, from what I can tell. All the food, all the culture. There's a chapter where he's like, well, he sat in a hot spring. It was horrible. The water was really hot. And then we had some raw fish. It wasn't even cooked. And it's just like, this is brilliant. To this. And
he's a man who, Amstrad, my first computer was an Amstrad CPC 6128. And it was a lovely little computer. But I mean, the company has a reputation of selling some pretty rough stuff back in the 80s. They would sort of take what the Japanese were doing with hi-fi separates and basically make hi-fi separates, but in one block, so that they would be kind of like connected to each other. So like you wouldn't have to kind of like mix and match. You just had a fully made kind of like, you know, pull out kind of system that you could just, that was just all one block basically. So it was like, it was kind of like getting something that looked quite nice but sounded terrible because the innards just were not very good.
Well, I think Amstrad's strategy was to basically take premium Japanese products and make them very cheap and sell them to British consumers. While Japanese people appreciate quality and premium goods, British people kind of value products, right? We want value for money. And Amstrad ticked that box. My first computer was an Amstrad when I was a kid. I don't remember what it was. I remember we'd feed in like a cassette a bloody cassette into it, and you'd
probably
put the cassette 464. On. And,
probably yeah, 464. And I used to play that was a tape system. It used to have green and red keys on the cassette recorder. Mm. So that was it.
Yeah, getting very nostalgic now. Nice. Well, I feel bad because Amstrad were having it. You know, they were a bit dodgy, some of their stuff, but for the most part, it was good. And then in the '90s, they commissioned some sort of computers, and they used, I think, hard drives made by Seagate. And Seagate had fucked the hard drives, which basically didn't work. And so they sold thousands of computers that didn't work properly. Right. And it destroyed their brand pretty much overnight and made them into this sort of unreliable brand that... And I think they sued Seagate later on down the line for a few $100 million or something. But
they used
yeah,
to...
unfortunate.
When you had like, I think it was something like, so they dominated the 8-bit market along with the Sinclair Spectrum. Mm-hmm. And we didn't come here to talk about computers, but we're doing it anyway. So, you know, otaku's pin your ears back. They dominated the 8-bit era with some, you know, really solid stuff. But I believe Spain or maybe Greece had an agreement with the government that companies who sold 16-bit machines would not be, or machines with a certain amount of RAM in them, certain amount of random access memory, you know, readable, writable memory. It would be cheaper to kind of sell them, and you could make more money off them, basically, because the tax was much lower because it was a new system and they wanted to update all of the computers that were available in that country. I think it was either Spain or Greece. And so Amstrad started shipping computers with extra memory, which would technically make them 16-bit machines, but I'm fairly certain they didn't wire up the pathways for that RAM.
It didn't work.
So it didn't actually... It contained that RAM, but it had no way of accessing it. I believe that was the case. It's a lovely little quirk. Just proper, like, Barrow Boy kind of attitude from that company. Just sort of going, oh, come on. Yeah, we'll just stick a bit of RAM in it. Ah, 16-bit in it. But, yeah, and in the way that, like, Mario was to Nintendo, the big kind of, like, poster boy for Nintendo, and Sonic was the animal that represented Sega. Around the like 88-bit, 16-bit era, companies and computer manufacturers, they tried to make their own kind of system seller. They tried to make their own character that would sell video game systems. And I keep meaning to sort of make a little video about it on YouTube, because there's not that much stuff on YouTube about this one character called Roland. Roland was the Amsoft, Amstrad little guy. But it was literally just whoever came to make video games for Amstrad would just sort of go, can you just rename that game about being in a cave, Roland in the cave, please? And they pretended that they had no similarities across the whole thing. Roland looked different in every single game. It was just shitty of like platformy games, and they would just say, yeah, that's Roland in this one. It was really funny how they would just brand up Roland on the ropes, Roland goes square bashing, Roland in the cave,
so cheap.
Roland through time, and it was just all the games. They didn't have anything to do with each other, but they were all called Roland because they tried to create like this mascot that was going to sell systems like Horace did, who went skiing and went all over the gaff over on the Spectrum. Really cheap stuff. I love it.
It was a simple time. A simple time when companies couldn't be bothered to make actual characters of their own that were good. But I'd love to get Alan Sugar, titan of industry, to come to Japan and do like a travel series where he just bumbles around Japan being unimpressed by the food, the cuisine, the people. What is this? This fish. Oh, it's horrible. This is. Oh, God. It'd be fucking brilliant.
It's always just so disappointing, these people who have the capacity and the finances to do whatever they want. You know, they have the capacity to go wherever they want and experience the whole world and do have all experiences that the man on the street can't have because they don't have that amount of money, and they absolutely hate being abroad.
Well, I can't blame them in the sense that back in the day, to come to Japan, you know, I forgot about this, but I was reading the book, to go to Japan from the UK, you have to always go via Alaska, like back in the day, because obviously the USSR, you couldn't fly over Soviet Russia and you couldn't fly over that way. So they had to stop in Alaska and Anchorage, and it must have been one hell of a journey. Mm. And I remember reading that and thinking, oh, thank God we don't have to do that now. And now we do. Admittedly, we don't have to stop in Anchorage. We get to fly over it. But now the flight route is exactly the same way that you would have done back in the 80s. So it's all come full circle. We've got a story this week from Luke. Tune in next week for Retro Tech with Pete Donaldson.
Yeah.
We've got a story this week from Luke from the UK. Begins, hi, Chris and Pete. My name's Luke, and I'm from the UK. And I'd love to congratulate Chris and Charlotte on the wonderful news. That's right, guys, if you missed it, we're engaged. We haven't talked about it much, apart from every social media post. But it's good news. It's very happy. I'm very happy. And let's carry on. Back in late December 2019, I watched an old video of Chris's where he mentioned an app called Hello Talk. I decided to give it a go, and soon I was speaking to a girl who lived in Tokyo. We decided that I'd help her with English. We became pretty good friends, texting each other almost every day, and decided that when I visit Japan in May 2020, we would meet up. We'd continue to speak to each other almost every single day, and we'd both expressed the desire to be more than just friends.
Aww.
When Japan reopened, this is brilliant, with Hello Talk, right? When I did the sponsorship thing, or I mentioned them years ago, they specifically told me, like, make sure you don't encourage this as a dating app. And, like, the only thing anyone has ever used it for is to hook up with people or flirt with
is
people.
Is that right?
Because why not?
Interesting. Wow.
You can blame them. I mean, it's just you can see why. Anyway, when Japan reopened its borders, I booked to visit for 2 weeks in January 2023. That was just last month. We met up as planned, and she suggested we make a plan to meet up every other day while I was in Japan to spend some time together. We made plans for the next three times we'd meet before we said our goodbyes. I thought it went really well, but the night before we'd planned to meet up again, she texted me and said she couldn't go and that she was sorry she couldn't meet up. I responded and was promptly ignored for the following 4 days. She hadn't even opened my message after those 4 days, and I messaged her again, asking if she could at the very least let me know if she was okay, as I was worried about her well-being. I actually received a response to this, just 4 words, "I'm okay, I'm sorry." Aww. Knowing now that she was in fact just ignoring me, I asked if I'd done something wrong. 6 days pass, and it's around 6 p.m, the day before I'm due to leave Japan, when I finally receive a response. She basically tells me that she struggled to accept the real me, and that I was more shy and less talkative than she expected, rounding it off by saying she felt a gap because she set her expectations too high. Oh my god, I still enjoyed my time in Japan anyway, doing everything we'd planned to do together alone. Had I known she would ignore me the entire time I was there, I probably would have strayed further away from Tokyo during my trip. Love the podcast and all the videos. Luke from the UK. A warning there on not to flirt with people from Hello Talk, lest you get rejected and ruin your trip to Japan. Sorry to hear that, Luke. That's just a really shit thing. What a that's just harsh, isn't it? Oh, sorry, I didn't meet up with you. You were shit. Like, fucking hell.
I don't know, but I think you build these things up and you build these people up in your mind. And I think Luke seems refreshingly sanguine about the whole situation. Like, he's sort of not. He doesn't express a particular, like, that was gutted that I somehow didn't provide what she needed from me. And he was not particularly offended by it, by the sounds of things, and investing that amount of time in something. I mean, I just hope that your language sort of levels kind of improve. But Luke, I'm glad you're slightly relaxed about it all.
Have you ever had
taking it all in your stride?
Online date like that went into in real life and then didn't go as planned. I think
it's kind of like people having like dates, isn't it? It's people like just having normal kind of Tinder dates, isn't it? Where you talk for ages,
true.
And then for whatever reason it just doesn't click, and you throw the rarefied pressurized air of a new country, a holiday, and a language barrier as well. I mean, wow, it really does ramp it up. So yeah, well, so unlucky Luke, but plenty more chats in the sea, so to speak.
Yeah, plenty more biscuits in the tin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Use Hello Talk for educational purposes, not romance. I remember years ago, it must have been 2015 when I first came across it. I did have like a thing with a girl on there, and we talked for, it must have been, days on end. And then one day she just sort of ghosted me, and I was like, all right then. Fucking Hello Talk, god damn it. Brought nothing but pain to the world. I damn this app. Give me some news, Pete. Cheer me up. Enough Hello Talk, enough romance gone wrong.
Well, I guess we're we're over Valentine's Day. We're past that, but
failed romance.
We're talking all things dates here, Chris. Is it okay to split the bill on a date in Japan? A survey asks what women and men of different ages think. What's your policy on splitting the bill? Do you have to have gone out with somebody for a little while before you start splitting the bill, or do you kind of start splitting the bill and then as you become a codependent relationship, you kind of rotate back to 50-50? How does that work?
No, I make them pay for the bill from day one and then just go for them every time.
Yeah. All right,
I don't know. I think with Charlotte, we absolutely do it sort of 50-50. I don't know, maybe I do it 60% of the time. Maybe she does it 60% of the time. I don't keep count. But we do, I think it's 50-50 pretty much. And I'd say, I think on the first dates and whatnot, I always try and pay and, be nice. But I don't know, what does Japan think about it all?
Well, Japanese dating app, another dating app, an actual dating app,
so to speak.
Omiai recently conducted a poll of 217 men and 247 women who have a romantic partner asking for their take on the situation. Some people may think that young women may be of the mindset that it's the guy's duty to pay. Female respondents in their teens and 20s were actually the least likely to say that they wanted men to pay for everything. That sentiment started rising rapidly among women in their 30s, though, and kept going up from there. So if you are going out with a 75-year-old woman from Japan, she will expect you to front all of the bill at Mackie D's. Fortuitously for the women who want the guy to cover all dating expenses, the proportion of guys who said they want to do so was slightly larger than the women in their age group on the other side of that arrangement, with the exception of those in their 40s. For some reason, people in their 40s go, nah, you're all right. Huh. The majority of women in their team said their preference is to split the costs more or less evenly, which is the largest response among 27 women as well. So it's 20-something women as well. So it just seems to be, as opposed to 20, 30 years ago, there's more willingness to split restaurant checks and other expenses as we grow and learn as a nation and as an international community. There is a steady but gradual transition to the man covering more and more expenses among older couples. So there you go. Maybe that's society. Maybe that's just something deep within us. Maybe it's our own preconceived ideas about the male-female connection.
Japan. Yeah. That's the way it's always been.
I mean, none of this deals with same-sex relationships or everything else in between. So maybe we'll need another one from that. Maybe Omiai needs to pull their finger out, so to speak, and find out.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that this is more about Japan sort of becoming more gender equal in the sense that before, like, men would have to pay for everything and whatnot back in the day. But also on the flip side of that, when you go to Japanese work parties, which I haven't done in a long time, the female staff are expected to be like a hostess, play like a hostess role,
right?
Which I forgot to write in my book, and I'm really annoyed. I need to go see if I can re-edit my bloody book. But
just release a Google Doc, mate.
Use ChatGPT to write the whole thing next time.
Yeah, exactly.
female colleagues, even if they're a supervisor, they'd be expected to basically rush to the bottle of sake, rush to the bottle of beer, and pour for everyone at work parties. I always found that a bit weird and a bit like, shouldn't we help? And the guys like, no. And the women were like, no, you sit there. It's our job now. I always found that a bit like, this is not good.
It's not great, is it? I mean, it's servitude thought of in a slightly different way, a more honorific thing to do in Japan. I would suggest that has nothing to do with it, and it's very much just old men being old men. And I think women, I'm not going to speak for women, certainly not, wouldn't even attempt it. I think they'd probably be more likely to want to split the bill if they got paid the same as men, which they don't. So almost the world over.
Fair point. But yeah, this is interesting. And equality is getting better in Japan generally. Slowly but surely. We're back in just a moment, guys, with our stories, comments and questions in the fax machine.
Ta-da.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this
hello.
Week from our listeners, Mr. Dalton? What are you saying
ta-ta.
Goodbye and hello?
I said ta-ta before the break and I said hello after the break. Hi, Pete and Chris. I got a question based on Chris's recent new good news. What does a Japanese wedding look like? How do they differ from the wedding ceremonies we have in the UK? Have you ever been to one? Michael from England. Chris, have you ever been to a Japanese wedding? I've walked past a few in the shrine in... Is it Himeji? Himeji Shrine near Harajuku? That little one near Yogi Park.
No,
always having them in there with the and the bride always has that big egg like Queen Amidala job going on.
What is the name of that shrine? I think no, it's Meiji. Yeah, sorry, Meiji shrine,
just Meiji, right? Okay,
Himeji's the chocolate company or the castle.
Yes, it is.
Take your pick. I like a just a big fucking Himeji chocolate shrine. Now that's something. That is where I'd have my wedding. You know, I don't think I've ever been to a Japanese wedding, like a pure Japanese wedding in the sense. I went to my friend Nick, his wedding last year, but he, you know, he's not Japanese and neither is his wife Angela. So it wasn't like a true authentic Japanese wedding. From what I understand and hear, Japanese weddings are quite formal. They don't all dance around to 80s music like Whitney Houston and Come On Eileen, like all the other bloody weddings I used to work on. There's no like, it's way more formal. There's a lot more speeches, endless speeches, and it's sort of just everyone eats cake. And also weirdly, they get just foreign white guys or whatever to play like a priest at the wedding and get them to sort of officiate the wedding, and which I've always found a bit odd. But it's kind of this trend to make it feel like an old, you know. What I didn't know, one thing I didn't know in Japan is people don't get engaged. They don't do the whole engagement ring thing. Because when I mentioned to Natsuki that I proposed to Sharla and got her a ring, he was like, wow, married. And I was like, no, not yet. One day. Engaged. And then Natsuki and Charlotte were like, oh yeah, they don't do that in Japan. And I was like, what? What? They just go straight from zero to 100, basically, and sign the documents and then have a ceremony. So it's a lot faster. I think some people do get engaged, but for the most part, yeah, it's not a part of Japanese culture. So
interesting.
Yeah, but I haven't been to one.
Straight in. So how does that actually work then? You sort of go, we're getting married tomorrow. How does that happen?
And they go, yes. And then you go down the market. I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I think
you have to buy two rings.
You'd have to buy all the wedding ring. You get the wedding ring, but you don't get the engagement ring.
That's the expensive one, isn't it? The old engagement ring. That's the punchy
money. But also at Japanese weddings, one not so good thing is the guests have to pay for the wedding. They turn up and you basically pay to attend it, right? Which is probably good for the married couple, right? But it's quite expensive. The one I went to is quite a bit. It kind of felt good to pay for their wedding a little bit, but on the other hand, yeah, Japanese weddings, expensive. To pay feels a bit weird, doesn't it? You know, if I was going to have a wedding,
it does. You'd be annoyed if you just night do as well. If you're just being allowed to the night do rather than the church. I'm not paying for this.
You get a discount for that. It'd be like, if you come to the evening, you still have to pay some money. It's expensive. It's expensive. But I haven't been to one, and I don't think I ever will. I don't think I know any Japanese friends are getting married anytime soon, unfortunately. Although I don't like weddings, given that I worked on 200 at Leeds Castle. But when I have my wedding, probably next year in the summer or something, I'll make sure it's good. I always said I wouldn't really have a good wedding. I'd just do like a really small one for like 10 people in a room. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, well, you know, it's a good chance to have everyone there for like a good reason all in one day, right?
You know what I mean. You can't scrimp. You can't scrimp and save, really. You've got to go all out, or you've got to do, you know.
I'll just make all the guests pay, though.
Hopefully.
I'll make them all pay. Sounds really sinister. I'll make them pay. We've got one here from Brandon. From Virginia, who says, greetings, Chris, his cool co-host and Pete's platonic partner. One thing I've always wondered was how you introduce yourself in Japan as a foreigner. I doubt it would matter much for a tourist, but do you adapt by saying your family name first or keep the Western convention? Is there ever confusion that people might think your family name is Kurisu? Congratulations on your engagement, Brandon from Virginia. People in Japan know a lot of Western names. I think Chris is one of them. So they wouldn't assume my first name's just Broad. Broad-san.
Yeah.
Hello, my name's Broad. So I introduced myself just going, oh, Kurisu tomoshimasu. Kurisu tomoshimasu. Like,
tomoshimasu.
It's kind of like the more polite way, right? Of being like, Chris Desh. Chris Desh, yo. one thing you should never do is go, watashi no namai wa Chris Desh. Like, nobody does that. You don't go,
you literally get taught in the Japan lessons.
I know, right? It drives me up the wall. There's so much crap in the textbooks that you don't actually do, or you shouldn't do. It's just awkward, and that's one of them. And that's usually, like, the first way you know if someone's good at Japanese or not. They'll introduce myself, like, watashi no namai wa Peter Donaldson Desh.
Never mind.
Oh, just go Pete Desh or... Yeah, just say Pete Tomoshimasu or Pete Desh.
Tomoshimasu. Oh,
keep it simple. But that's it, really. I was going, Chris, isn't it? Abroad in Japan, Desh. Abroad in Japan or Chris, something like that. I haven't introduced myself recently, but you use the phrase "Yoroshiku onegaishimasu" about 5 times in a sentence. So that's the only thing you need to know. Say your name.
Right.
Say "Yoroshiku onegaishimasu."
Right.
Job done.
Fine.
Got one last question here from Fahim, who says, hi, Kent, Chris, and Pennine Pete. Chris, congratulations on getting engaged to Sharla. I especially love the fact that it happened at Durdle Door. My question is, where do you plan to get married? Japan, UK, Canada, or elsewhere? Thank you very much, Fahim. We are going to get married in Hartlepool. Pete is going to be the vicar. It's going to be great. Hartlepool Docks.
It's hard, isn't it? You've got 3 different places that you could do it. You could go neutral, Switzerland, Philippines.
Do it in the middle.
I don't know. Yeah, just meet in the middle somewhere. One of those kind of weird islands.
Well, the middle point would be Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan. So I think I should invite friends from Japan and the UK. Actually, I met an Australian guy recently when Charlotte needed to get her ring sorted out, refitted, whatever. We went to a place, there was an Australian guy, and half his family were in Australia, half were in the UK, and they met in the middle in Dubai, but then they decided they couldn't do it in Dubai for whatever reason. I think it's quite difficult to do a Christian wedding there. So they did it in Georgia instead. And so they all met in the middle in Georgia, which is kind of cool. So we'll do it there. Why not? Mix things up a little bit.
Why not?
Or we'll do it right in the middle of Canada, the UK and Japan, which is probably the absolute North Pole. And that'd be pretty badass. On an icebreaker ship. Why not?
There must be a way to figure out... Find out midpoint between countries.
Japan, Canada, UK.
Yeah.
I reckon it is...
What's halfway?
It's Greenland. Or...
Yeah?
Yeah, Greenland, isn't it? Final answer.
Final answer. It's quite hard, really, isn't it? Yeah, all right. Fine.
What have you got?
There's loads of websites that is like halfway between two cities based on driving directions. That's not going to work. So find out what's halfway between two or more locations, how to find the halfway, geographic midpoint calculator. There's just a lot of...
This is what AI was made for. Ask ChatGPT.
You've got to type in like longitudes and latitudes and stuff. That's no good. Crying out loud.
I'm going with Greenland. Well, no, the actual wedding, for the moment, it's going to be in the UK, I think, just because family are there, and I think it'll be much easier to do it in the UK for the most part. Don't know if it'll be cheaper. But, the UK has got some really nice wedding venues. Not that Japan hasn't, but a lot of the wedding venues in Japan are like these really crappy, tacky, fake castles. Like, when I used to live in Sakata, and I don't know if you remember seeing them yourself when you were there, Pete, you drive down the road, and there's like four... around the town there's these big church looking buildings, and they basically look like love hotels because they're probably built by the same company. So the exterior looks like a Christian church, the interior just looks like a shed, and that's where a lot of people get married, in these kind of bland depressing places. There are some nice venues, but a lot of the wedding venues, even here in Sendai, aren't overly great, whereas the UK you've got like castles and a garden and a palace. Those three locations. But I think wedding venues, and speaking from experience working at Leeds Castle, like the wedding venue was pretty damn good. I think a castle could be good.
Yeah.
Or do something like, I don't know, a battleship or something like that.
Can I bring my sword? Can I bring the sword I brought
home
from Sweden?
You can fucking wave the sword around, it'd be great. Well, I kind of want to theme it though. I want to do like an 80s themed wedding, but without it being tacky. But it'll definitely
in a castle.
Tacky.
I'm trying to think what an 80s. Is there any 80s castle based films? 80s castle.
I'm
films.
Thinking no.
Ghost romances. Films set in castles.
In the 80s.
There's a lot of films set in castles.
It's just turning into one great big Goo lad this episode, isn't it?
Googling all these really
obscure things to this bloody wedding.
Thieves. When was that out? 1981. That's not even 80s. Oh. Couldn't dress like Alan Rickman. I guess I'd have a spoon.
But yeah, I think a castle in England, job done.
Castle in England.
But we'll see. 80s, we'll see.
An 80s wedding.
80s themed
in a castle in England. Lovely stuff.
Tick, tick,
fantastic.
Tick. Job done. Yeah. I remember working on some themed weddings, and some of them were really like tacky. There was one that was a candy themed wedding, and every table had like pick and mix sweets on it. And it was kind of cool.
I'm into that.
But it was also a little bit. I don't know, it didn't feel right. It felt a bit like
cheap.
Well,
I think drinking... the thing with weddings is, like, you start drinking Prosecco at, like, midday, and you don't stop. And
it's just your regular life, Pete.
If you're not prepared with, like... If you're not prepared yourself with a load of antacids, you may find yourself in a bit of trouble. That's all I'm saying.
Very true, very true. Yeah. I think I'll stay away from the candy-themed wedding. It was weird. Like, people spent £21,000 on this wedding. A nice venue. And then everything was, like, candy-coloured and just shit. Just looked really bad. And one of the benefits of working there was I got to eat a lot of the candy that night. It made life more fun. Most weddings are all the same. And I think that's another reason I didn't like weddings. Like, when you've worked on 100-plus weddings, you see... the patterns. You see, they all use the same music. They all have the same first dance to the same stuff. And it was just a bit like, oh, God.
I'm over
cookie
this.
Cutter bullshit, yeah. But mine won't be like that. I'll make it good. It'll be great. It'll be like a Journey Across Japan episode on steroids. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to brawnjapanpodcast@gmail.com, guys. We'll be back later in the week, still later again. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days. And we'll see you right back here to do it all over again on the Braun Japan Podcast. Bye for now.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.